Carvana's so easy, just a click, and we've got ourselves a car. See?
So many cars. That's a clicktastic inventory.
And check out the financing options. Payments to fit our budget. I mean, that's...
Clickonomics 101.
Delivery to our door?
Just a hop, skip, and a click away.
And bought.
No better feeling than when everything just... clicks. Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 453. On the podcast today, CEO of Kibo Mining, that's K-I-B-O, Leo Kutsi, talks about the timeline events investors can expect. He also answers investors' questions. And I tell you what, here's a company with quite a large resource in Tanzania, and makes me very, when I hear the size of resource close to infrastructure, I like it a lot. So it's worth listening to that. Also, stock has been doing very well of late, and I missed the boat, but now it's having a bit of a pullback, so it's raising my interest. Dave Reeves, Managing Director of Keras Resources, that's KRS, worth checking out, putting on your watch list. Also, Doc Holliday, small cap commentator, covers Red Rock Resources, Onzima Ventures, African Potash, Greatland Gold, Metal Tiger, 88 Energy, and Arion Silver.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Kibo Mining, that's K-I-B-O ticker. It's Louis Kutsia. Hi, Louis, you all right?
I'm fine, and yourself?
Yeah, I'm very good. Where are you at the moment, Louis?
I'm in Brussels at the moment.
Okay, good. All right. Well, listen, I've had a lot of requests to get you on in the past on the podcast, and so I'm glad to get you on. And so there's a lot of private investors looking forward to the interview. But for people not quite sure what Kibo do, can you explain, Louis, what you're all about, Kibo Mining?
Well, Kibo is at the moment a Tanzania-based mining development company with a number of assets, which we have diversified across four commodities, gold, uranium, and nickel. And we have, at the moment, three key flagship projects which we are developing there, most notably our Haneti nickel project, our Imweru gold project, and then the more well-known or the more familiar Mbeya coal to power project that we're developing at the moment.
Yes, and so, you've got a quite a big asset resource there, haven't you? I mean, can you give any kind of indication of how big these resources are? Because I have a lot of people say, you know, you should put Kibo on your watch list because it's got a lot of resources, it's got a lot of things going on. Is there any way of, you know, summarizing the size of the asset and resources you have in any way whatsoever?
Well, the nickel project at the moment is still an exploration project, which we're still busy developing in terms of early stage exploration. It's drill ready, and we hope to do that fairly soon. And then we have the Imweru project, which is about a 550,000 ounce gold deposit, further complemented by the Lubondu gold deposit of about further 150,000 ounces, and which is at the moment the subject of a pre-feasibility study, which is being conducted, albeit at a fairly subdued pace at the moment. And then there's, of course, our big Mbeya coal to power project, which is just this morning we released the figures, which is about 120 million ton deposit, of which 90% is in the measured and indicated categories, and which we hope to develop into a 300 megawatt coal-fired power station. Part of the feasibilities, pre-feasibility studies that we released during the course of last year, we also at the same time announced the NPV values that were mentioned on these projects. And you know, if you go back to those announcements, we're looking at project values of the combined project values of in the 350 to 400 million dollar range at the moment. Projects that from an NPV value look very robust and healthy, and then also from a potential future return on equity and in return on investment side, have given us astounding figures. that we're really excited about.
Yeah, so that's an amazing sort of NPV value of, like I said, $350 to $400 million when you are at the moment a market cap of $11 million. So we can see some upside potential there. Okay, so let's go through some questions, Louis, I've had from private investors. The first one, I suppose, is based on that. Why is the share price not reflecting the value at the moment? Do you have any idea why that's happening?
I do not have an explanation. I think if I had, the share price wouldn't be where it is at the moment. But I don't understand. I think we are in a certain way just being treated like any other exploration company is being treated, which I think is not entirely right. Specifically, if you look at where we are with them, they are called to power project, in which we in a very advanced stage. We have already, as I've just mentioned, delivered a pre-feasibility study on the mine, a pre-feasibility study on the power plant. We have just announced last week that we've completed the definitive feasibility work on the power station, that we are in a very advanced stage with the definitive feasibility work on the mine, that the environmental assessment and all other related studies are progressing very well, which puts us in a space where we are actually not only an early stage developer, but at least approaching a position where we are an advanced stage developer and not just another early stage exploration resource company. And I think if the market can come to terms with that, we will also probably see a better position in the share price. But other than that, I can't see any reason why our share price is not where it's supposed to be. All the projects are fundamentally healthy. The company is fundamentally healthy. We're making good progress. We are 100% on schedule at the moment in terms of our various timelines and milestones that we set forward for the various projects, most notably the MCPP or the Mbeya Gold to Power project. So I wish I could give you a one-line answer to it, but I am at a loss, I think, as much as some of the investors are.
Well, you know, obviously, if you are a shareholder now, then that's quite frustrating. But obviously, there's a potential there for other investors to see the value here and jump on board, I suppose. Okay, so the next question is, what percent of the coal mine and power plant does Louis envisage holding onto once a strategic partner comes in on the project?
I'm just going to repeat the question because I think I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. The line was a little bit bad. Are you asking me what the percentage is that Kibo is holding of the project at this stage or in future?
It's saying, in fact, let's do both. What are you holding at the stage? And also, what do you intend to hold once a partner comes on board?
Understood. At the moment, we still hold 100% of all our flagship projects. In other words, the Aneti, the Imweru, and the MCPP, we hold 100% of it. And specifically, as far as the MCPP is concerned, we've done everything we can to date to hold on to 100% of the equity, so that when we get to that point where we really have to go for the big finance, we can retain as large a stake as possible. Now, what exactly that stake will be when we reach that point is very difficult to say at this stage. What is important, however, is that whatever that stake is, and whatever we have to let go in terms of making the project work, if we have to, will come at a decent premium. And if we did not hold on to the equity, and if we did not keep on developing the project by ourselves, as we are doing at the moment, that would have come at a premium. We wouldn't have been able to position ourselves in a situation where we can get a premium for any of the equity, but it would have been certainly at a discount. So I can't tell you exactly what that percentage will be in the future, but what I can tell you is whatever equity we let go of will be at a premium and not at a discount.
Okay, so obviously a priority at the moment, correct me if I'm wrong, is obviously the Mbeya Coal to Power project. Is that right?
The Mbeya Coal to Power project, yes.
Yeah, so if we look at the timelines here, so describe exactly where we are at the moment and essentially where you hope to get to at what time, and, you know, what's the goal here? When are you finally up and running with and producing, and is the power station running? So what's the timeline there, Louis?
I think the important thing to understand, we've just recently published a timeline for the further development of the MCPP, which people can view on our official website. Now, that timeline is still very much current, and that's the timeline that we are on schedule with at the moment. The major things that we're aiming for at this point in time is to still complete the bankable feasibility that we've put forward. And the bankable feasibility will basically comprise an integration of the mining definitive feasibility study, the power definitive feasibility study, the environmental impact assessment, and obviously the financial modeling around all of this. We still hope to see that finished by the end of quarter two, so that we can start with the financing activities or project finance, the actual financing initiative of the project by quarter three this year. But what is really important to focus on is the completion of the bankable feasibility, integrated bankable feasibility on schedule at the moment, and the start of financing activities or the commencement of the financial close process. Maybe more accurate to say the financing section or the financing portion of this project. Now, those are the two critical dates or critical milestones for the rest of this year, and at the moment, we remain on schedule to meet those. With a view then, if we can continue on that basis, to see first power delivered into the grid first quarter of 2019.
Okay, that's important. Just go over again the next two milestones coming up. So so we can just underline that. Just go through that again, please, Lou, if you could.
The critical milestones at the moment, the key ones, is the integrated bankable feasibility and the commencement of financing activities or financing or the commencement of financial close. Those are the two critical ones. We're on schedule with that, and maybe just to try and give a little bit of perspective, for the integrated bankable feasibility, we have to complete the definitive mining feasibility, we have to complete the definitive power feasibility, and also the environmental and social impact assessment.
Okay, excellent stuff. Okay, and how are you feeling earlier at the moment? I mean, are you confident everything's going to plan and everything's going in the right direction?
Well, we are indeed. We're very, very confident in terms of where we're going with the project. Everything at the moment is well in place. We are making really good progress on each one of these parallel work streams that I've explained just now. We are on schedule with all of them. As I said, I think towards the end of last week, there was a little bit of confusion in terms of where exactly we are in terms of these timelines and the various milestones. Well, I can confirm we are on schedule. We are on track with all of them. We get excellent and outstanding cooperation from the Tanzanian government and related agencies in Tanzania, who has really gone out of their way so far to see that the project doesn't run into any unnecessary obstacles or red tape that will delay the process. So all in all, I don't think we can ask to be in any better position than the one that we are in at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. And a couple of people have mentioned that the share price dropped on Friday. Was that a surprise to you there?
It was a bit of a surprise, but as I say, it is apparently to a bit of a misunderstanding on timelines and where we are with the process. There's absolutely no reason for that to have happened. The main thing is, as I've said just now, the project and the company for that matter, but specifically the MCPP, is fundamentally healthy, on track, on schedule, and on target to deliver on the milestones that it's published on our website.
Marvellous. Well, it's nice to clear that up, because I know some people, you know, with a bit of uncertainty, they start to worry and wobble. So anyway, brilliant. Louis, listen, if you could, for any people listening who haven't already invested in Kibo, can you give us sort of three reasons why someone should put Kibo Mining on their watch list?
Well, I would think in a nutshell, it's going to be difficult to find a company with a project composition like ours that is complemented with the level of in-country expertise and experience and understanding that we have. In other words, discounting all the country risk and everything that comes along with it. Secondly, it's going to be difficult to find a portfolio that has got more diversified merit than ours. In other words, we have a well-diversified portfolio with some really good projects in each one of these commodity silos that I've mentioned earlier. And that is really good given where we are in terms of the overall position in the resources sector, where you have a diversified portfolio with strong projects in each. And then thirdly is the fact that we have been able to advance all of these projects to a level where over the last 18 months we've brought the company from a pure early stage explorer to an advanced developer, where we have clearly defined risk, where we have raised confidence levels, and where we have put material value to what the value of these various projects are.
Thank you very much for coming on. I suppose it must be, at the moment, a little bit frustrating for you seeing the share, you know, the market cap at just 11 million when there's so much value upside. Is that the case?
Well, I think the positive side of that is this provides excellent opportunity to buy stock at a very, very, very low and decent price. I think that's maybe the positive side of it. The negative side is, yes, we would like to see the share price better. And I do believe that we will see that re-rating as we continue to announce results on the various projects we're working on, most notably on the MCPP. But I think the positive of it is it still provides an opportunity to acquire stock at a very decent price.
Marvellous. Louis, thank you for coming on. And listen, do please come on again when you have some more information out there. Thanks very much.
Love to do that.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Managing Director of Keras Resources at Dave Reeves. Thanks for coming back on, Dave.
Great to chat again, Justin.
Now, listen, do you know what? You got away from me a little bit. I was, you know, we talked first of all, the share price was at a nice little level. Then all of a sudden it started really going some. And I thought, oh, I've missed out here. I had lots of people on Twitter saying, you should get into Keras. I said, I know, I think I'm a bit too late here. But I can see an opportunity arising. But listen, before we go into that, Dave, for people, you know, who haven't heard you on before, take us through what you're all about there at Keras.
Yep, very simply, Justin, we are producing, mining gold now in Australia. Only started the physical mining operation a few weeks ago, delivered our first ore parcel the other day, and expecting our check from that very shortly. So we are mining gold down there via what are called tributes. Basically, other people's gold, we go in, we mine, get it processed through their mill or a third-party mill, and generally get to split the profits. In one case, 50-50, in the other, we pay a small royalty. But what it means, low capital, we just go in, set up the mine, get mining, and produce cash flow.
Okay, so how many tribute mines do you have at the moment?
So we've got three tributes in total, but there'll be two main operations. One we call the Grants Patch Tribute with Norton Goldfields. There's historically over 350,000 ounces of resource associated with that tribute. And that tribute, the jewel in the crown will be the Prince of Wales underground mine, goes 8 to 10 grams a tonne. So that really is a license to print money once we get that up and running. In the meantime, we've started with the low-hanging fruit, the shallow open pit gold areas that we can get easy access to. We'll shortly be moving into our second tribute area with an ASX company called Cal North on the Lindsay's deposit. And that will be some open pit to start with. But again, main prize in town will be the underground there.
Okay, well, take us through the last RNS you had, the first ore haulage at Grants Patch. What happened there?
Yeah, so we actually unfortunately don't get to own a gold bar at the end. What we do, though, is get a nice big fat check. And nice. That's dependent on us delivering ore to the Paddington ROM pad or run of mine pad, which is the area we deposit material in front of the mill. And once we do that and we close off what we call a parcel, which has to be greater than 3,000 tonnes of ore, then the clock starts ticking 42 days from then until we get that first check.
All right. So I don't understand why there's been, it's almost like this phenomenon that happens. It's people buy on rumour and then all of a sudden they sell on a bit of fact here. Now, your share price has done really well over the last couple of months. It's gone from 0.4 pence right up. It was quadrupled in more than that, almost at 1.8, and then came back down. This last couple of days, it's had a bit of weakness. I mean, apart from being an opportunity, Can you see why this has happened in any way?
Oh, look, I think, you know, you always get a bit of consolidation at times, some profit takers, you know, some people who did buy in at 0.4 have made good money, and some of them have wants and desires that they need that money for, so they'll sell some or what have you. And, you know, I think we need to show how quickly things are moving out there, and, you know, it really is a solid operation now that will just be moving forward. And we need to get people who are a bit stickier, a bit longer term, and want to grow with us as we grow our production. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I think we had a good run. I think that's on the back of the fact that we weren't worth a hell of a lot before, and now suddenly we've got gold mines up and running. So, you know, that increase, I think, has been well and truly deserved. And what we need to do is consolidate and go again from here.
Yeah, well, it seems a bit of a support level here at the moment, 1.2-ish, or just above that. So, if we talk in sense of figures and revenue here, what are we looking at on this?
So, we are planning on between 20,000 and 30,000 ounces per annum, building to 30,000 to 40,000 ounces per annum next year. That's from the tributes we've signed up now. We are looking around at other opportunities to grow that, but be that as it may, let's take the average of all of that, 30,000 ounces, our all-in sustaining cost, including royalties at Norton's around $1,200 to $1,250 an ounce, gold price about $1,650 at the moment, so about $400 an ounce margin there, and not a lot different in Cal North. So if you do your sums and times your ounces by your margin, you get a feeling for the revenue. Oh, for the cash, sorry, not the revenue, that's the cash.
Yeah. Okay, and you are, well, pretty much, what should we look at, 15 million market cap at the moment, around about that?
Yeah, for sure. So probably a bit less than that at the moment. And, you know, keeping in mind that that's just the gold and in the back pocket, just waiting for its time in the sun is the manganese, and on current manganese prices, which have gone tremendously over the last couple of months, that thing, you know, makes an absolute shedload of cash. So, you know, that's something we'll look at when the time's right.
Yeah, I've got a point that you said shedload there, didn't you?
That's a technical term.
Yeah. No, I know that, yeah. Okay, marvellous day. Well, listen, I mean, anyone not in here, anyone not invested in Keras here, give us, you know, three reasons. I mean, because you've got this, I mean, because you turned the company around. Originally, you weren't. You focused on iron, I suppose, and you turned this company around, a new sort of business model, and it's working out for you. You've got it's proving here that it's working, it's going forward. And like you say, you intend to ramp up this production here over the next couple of years. So if anyone needs convincing, Dave, let's have three reasons why someone should put Keras on their watch list.
I think the three main reasons is we've proven that we can get into production as we said we would in gold in a very short time frame on very low capital. So that's number one. Number two, we are now making cash. And number three, we will be expanding on that cash flow over the next 12 to 18 months as we bring the high-grade undergrounds in and potentially some other areas.
Yeah, and you also got a bit of skin in the game yourself. You're a shareholder, aren't you, on there?
Yeah, board and management own 26% of the company. We've put a lot of our own money in, so we are highly, highly leveraged to how well the company goes.
Yeah, and did I see, I think it was via Twitter feed, I don't know if it was true footage, but there was showing the haulage, is that right?
Yep, we're pretty active on Twitter, lots of photos and videos and whatnot to just give a feel for what's happening out in the field to people. RNSs can be a little bland at times, so you know, we hope it provides a bit more colour to what's happening out there.
Marvellous. Well, listen, Dave, thanks for coming on again and giving us an update on what's happening down there with the haulage, and I'm sure we'll be having some more good news from you soon. But at the moment, like I said, it's a pullback in share price. You know, it proves a little bit of an opportunity to be like myself, who missed out first time round, and now, you know, you are more intently on my watch list because I think, you know, you've got a proven sort of business model there and it's going forward. And I see the volume of shares is very good today. 20 million shares traded. That's a lot of interest in the stock, isn't it?
Yeah, no, we've had really good volume over the last couple of weeks. So I think, you know, the message and the word is getting out on what we are doing. So, yeah, good volume, has been a bit of a pullback. So, yeah, would make sense to be a good buying opportunity based on that.
Marvellous. Dave, speak soon, fella.
Good on you. Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me on the podcast right now is Small Cap Authority, Doc Holliday. You all right, Doc?
Hi, mate. You okay? How are you today?
Not too bad. How are you feeling going into this week? Are you feeling bullish, bearish? What's your thoughts?
I've not quite decided. I think I might have got out on the wrong side of bed this morning. It's bit choppy. There's some things that are doing quite well. The FTSE seems to be pushing on that 6,200 area again, and we all stand by our best to see whether we're gonna see a break above that. It's failed on, I think, 15, 16 attempts now, so we'll wait and see. But there's always a bit of activity down in the small caps, so that keeps us entertained and interested.
Exactly. Have you had any nice rises today amongst the small caps you own?
I'm not even that sure where things are at. No, I don't think I have. I think there's a few things like African Potash that are up a little bit. You know, Kuv was knocking at that 29p. We'll wait to see if 30p will go or not. There's a few things doing, relatively well. There's quite a lot of anticipation on a number of companies. And needless to say, some of the usual suspects are promoting as well as can be expected via more and more RNSs. I noticed 88 Energy have put out a presentation. I thought these things were an RNS reach announcement rather than just a straightforward RNS. Those of you that look at the RNSs, you see a little grey area coloured in instead of the RNS being in black, and that means it's a notification, an informative RNS, and that's what I would deem the presentation as. Maybe there's been a material change within that. I guess I've gone past really worrying too much what's going on with 88 Energy. To me, it looks grossly overvalued. The company have pointed out on numerous occasions that they're going to need additional funding, so for me the writing's on the wall with that one.
Yeah, well, that's currently at, as we look now, down at nearly 1% to 2.6. What's the market cap now on this company? Because, the 82 million market cap, which is quite rich, I suppose. So would you be interested in buying into the stock? If so, at what level, though?
What, 88 Energy?
Yeah.
Well, a penny, maybe a penny and a half. I might reconsider, my position. I think for that company, they would have been better suited to try and raise their cash in a rising market with all of that kind of bullish sentiment behind them. I think now it's gonna weigh on it quite heavily. I think it's the same story with African Potash. About 6 months ago, they did a massive move in the market. There's a hell of a sentiment and momentum behind it. Hats off to Chris Cleverly. He said he didn't want to raise cash at that point. He felt it was worth a bit. There was more in it. The markets, I guess, turned against him somewhat. Maybe things didn't go quite as quickly as he'd have hoped. And as a consequence, instead of being at, 2p, 3p, you're now at 1.5p. It's a chance you always take, but trying to raise cash, when momentum's kind of waning and you go in the opposite direction, it can make for some pretty kind of treacherous pricing situations and scenarios. So for me, it would be the same situation for Metal Tiger, 88 Energy, and African Potash back 6-12 months ago. You should really be raising cash into the momentum, and I think Dave Linegas was the king of doing that with UCOG and other companies when he knew that the market was on side and they were singing with him. He always took a bit of the cash because he knew, you never know how much you're going to need and when you'll next be able to get it. And he took a lot of stick for that.
Well, he was heavily promoting, I suppose. But with African Potash, I had a sort of almost counterintuitive buy last Thursday because I thought, we haven't heard from Chris Cleverly for a while, and people are starting to doubt the contracts now out there, because I think I may get this wrong, but wasn't it originally within 5 days the payment was supposed to come through from the original fertilizer deal, and here we are 5-6 months later, and the majority of the cash hasn't come through, and I just thought, listen, that's priced in. I mean, that is now priced in, I think. It's grinding low. And I saw it at sort of, 1.3 last Thursday. And I thought, oh, it's a support level there. I'll just see what happens. And I bought in on a down day on Thursday evening or Thursday afternoon. And it's jumped 2 days since. But where does it go from here? It needs news, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if Chris doesn't deliver, then it's gonna take a further hit, and it might be, you know, quite a bit of a spanking. But I'm pretty confident that he's gonna come up trumps. I've got no kind of doubts that he'll get the deal away eventually. You know, you're dealing in Africa. You're dealing, you know, with some of the most sophisticated people in one of the most unsophisticated environments from time to time. So it makes it a bit of a tricky one. You know, you can run into all sorts of kind of, you know, hurdles and have a number of encounters when you're dealing with any kind of business. You know, with African Potash's case, it's a bit, you know, it can be complex because of the nature of the way that the market relies on news and timelines and stuff like that, and the very fact that these things often don't deliver as quickly as people would anticipate, and then you can run into any number of issues out in country, particularly when operating in difficult environments at times. As I say, I don't have any great concerns. I think you know you've made the right call on that buy at 1.3. You know, if you were an uber cautious guy, you might set an alert for a notification to inform you should it drop through that level, and if you don't get that, then you just, you know, stand by bed and wait for things to come good. If he announces that news, and he, you know, I think you said it on your weekend podcast, exceeding expectations, often is the case when you exceed expectations and you deliver on what you say you're going to do, the market loves it and it reacts well, and I think there's the upside for you. And we know it got to up towards that 3.5p level last time. There's nothing to suggest that can't happen again. So there's plenty of upside, and I guess there's still an element of risk. The longer it is that we don't hear from Chris, then the more the risk increases, I guess. But market seems to be quite satisfied at this 1.2, 1.3 level. So as long as it stays there and it kind of gets above that 1.5p level, I'd say if you get over 1.5, 1.75, then you're really going to start see things moving along, you know?
Yeah. Okay, what else are you in? What else are you interested in at the moment?
Well, I'm always interested in loads of companies, Justin. I guess Ariane Silver, I've been talking about that for a couple of months now. We've had, you know, a few moves from, I think, the first call was around that spot 9.25 to a penny area. Got to about 1.5, 1.6p. It's come down. It's gone back up. People have said to me, you know, what about this potential short squeeze position that was in the market? What happened to that? I think people have lost sight that there was a 65, 70% move. Not all of these positions that are out in the market are going to be the same as the New World Oil scenario. Sometimes you never really know, and you've got to suck it and see. But that move, I would say, vindicates anybody that doubted that position was out there. And it's held up quite nicely since around this 1.15, 1.2 area. The guy, you know, Jim Williams has already said that he anticipates fully that people will be subscribing for the warrants and options that were given with the last fundraise at a premium. He sees that as his next kind of inflow of cash, because people will see the company trading at a premium to the option price and will want to convert them, and that will help him take the business forward. But nobody's going to be in a rush to do that until they get news and they need some confirmation.
So at the moment, I know you're quite bearish. You said you're sitting on a bit of cash there on your portfolio. So how many stocks are you holding at the moment?
About nine, but, you know, there's nine different companies across, you know, about three accounts, but the some of them accounts have got the same stock in. So, you know, I'll take a guess and say six or seven, you know, something like that. Different companies. There's no really big exposure. I think the most I've got invested at the minute is probably either Ariane or even Red Rock Resources, and I know that's one where people kind of gulp when I even mention it. But you know, I revisited that again recently. I looked at the actual asset that Jupiter Mines have got and the amount of money that went into that, and obviously Red Rock have got a 1.2% holding in it, or 27 million shares. And that was valued around about, it's tricky this, because you look at certain pockets of information and they work in dollars, then they flip back to pounds. I think it's about £3.5-4 million sterling is the valuation of that stock. And, you know, you go on that rule of thumb, if there was a fire sale and you needed to get rid of the asset, it's in a private company, you're never going to get the value of it. But if you can sell it for half of what it's worth, that that 20-odd million shares, that Red Rock holding Jupiter, can unlock a couple of million quid really easily. Now, this is a company with £1 million market cap. The management have not been great. They've not delivered. There's a lot of speculation over Andrew Bell and his competency and stuff like that. But I looked at the thing that drove me into this is I looked at the deal with Greatland Gold, where Andrew's the chairman. Metal Tiger went in there and did a deal with Greatland Gold. The CEO's changed position. He's now executive director. And Metal Tiger and Paul Johnson have gone in there with a plan to drive things on. The share price was trading at 80% premium to the price that Metal Tiger come in at. 3 days, 4 days before that, Andrew Bell, the chairman of the company, had increased his position. It suggests to me that Bell and Johnson have worked together to try to find a way to again, try and unlock some of the value in Greatland Gold. I believe that Terry Grammer, Metal Tiger's expert and Geo, had taken a look at the assets and felt they were good. There was some definite value in it, and they were prepared to stump up some cash. So I looked at the way that they were working together there, and I thought to myself, if there was ever a time that you would want to replace the deadwood in that management team, that would be the time to do it. And they kept Andrew Bell on as chairman, and I think there's more to that relationship than meets the eye. We know that Johnson's already declared that he's got a holding in Red Rock Resources. He intends to increase that. He's not of a notifiable size as of yet, and I think, you know, whilst I've been a critic of Paul's in some respects, I'm actually, you know, quite a supporter of him in others. He made a hell of a lot of money about 8 years ago in the markets from buying up these bombed out resource companies, and he's done really, really well for himself. And if you look across the board now, it's what he's been doing with his own personal cash, it's what he's been doing with Metal Tiger. While I think Metal Tiger is grossly overvalued, I just think that Red Rock is way undervalued, and that influence, that input, if we were to see Paul take some kind of a position within Red Rock, or whether it be as an investor, whether it be in a consultancy or management position, I think it would change the whole dynamics. It's got £1 million market cap, 5-well program at Schultz Creek. You know, what's the not to like? That's the promotional side of it. The risk is that Andrew Bell keeps on dragging his knuckles and doesn't deliver on anything. And you'll probably find that this company could go to the wall. So there's the upside and the worst case downside.
Yeah, very interesting, because I know, like you said, Andrew Bell has his knockers there. Every time he's at the podcast and I ask people to submit questions, I get a lot of questions I can't even ask because some people are angry about Red Rock Resources. But like you said, do you know, even look at the chart, though. It's been bumping along at that, you know, 0.3, 0.35 level for a while. And just now, last couple of trading sessions, like you said, it's jumped up to 0.55, hit its head in the 200-day moving average. But you'd suggest there's a bit of interest coming in there now, so it may go a bit further.
Well, I look at it like this, you know, you look at Paul Johnson. He founded Mining Maven with a guy called Malcolm Palais. It's been a labour of love over the years for those two. If you look at the businesses that are on the Mining Maven website, ECI Minerals, Kibo Mining, Norricum Gold, Graveland Gold, Red Rock Resources, Coincilium, all of these companies are kind of in-house companies of Mining Maven, the company that Malcolm and Paul were co-founders of. So these guys have got a hell of a deep insight into those businesses and the workings. They understand where the opportunities lie better than anybody else. That's what's drawing me to Red Rock Resources. I don't want people to misunderstand me and think that, you know, this is going to be the next one that goes in 10 bags. It may not. But I just think with £1 million market cap, it looks cheap. And at some point, somebody's going to show these companies a little bit of love. And that's the kind of risk to punt that I'm taking on it. But there's a bunch of companies out there that are looking quite attractive at the minute. We're seeing MX Oil. That's getting a bit of interest now. We know that Onzima have announced today that they've sold down their position in MX Oil. They've retained 4 million one pence warrants in the company, so they've got zero risk now. I think they took a net return on the actual equity of 6-7% gain. and they've talked about a strong news flow that they expect in the very in the coming weeks, based around the principal investment that they're looking to work on, and that's the N4 Pharma deal. That's interesting to me because they've obviously took the position in the market for MX Oil to take the options on with no risk of downside, only the upside, and actually have taken a bit of a gain on the equity. It's not a bad strategy, really, because it means there's no risk and you've got loads and loads of potential on the upside should they deliver.
Marvellous, Doc. It's always interesting to chat to you on stocks there, and thanks for coming on. Speak next week, fella.
No problem. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Don't forget, get involved in the oil price sweepstake at voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS. All right, and we'll be updating that. It is another rollover. No one guessed before 4:30 correctly on Thursday that the price of Brent crude would be exactly, I think it was $40.20, I think, exactly on Friday midday. So your guesses have to be in before 4:30 on a Thursday. And we take the price at midday of Brent crude oil on Friday. All right. If you guess correctly, you win. I think it's a triple rollover now. So you're going to win about in excess of $120. You know what I'm saying? Free cash. Doesn't get much better than that. Or do me a favor. If you can do as well, you know, get involved with the show here. Just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog and click the link. And if you can give me a 5-star rating and review, if you value the show, it does help with searching of the show. And the more people listen, the more likely the show is, you know, to continue. If no one's listening, it's not going to happen. People do listen, obviously. But the ratings on iTunes helps get it discovered by a new audience. That would help very much. And the audience is growing, I'm pleased to say. So thank you for supporting me. But anything else? Oh, yes, listen. I will be reading out one of those reviews tomorrow, plus a stock with potential, which you can suggest yourself. Plus, I'll also be talking or revealing my £1 million penny stock punt challenge version 2.0. I decided to start this again. Not again. My version 1 is still running. My second stock, of course, the way it works, 10 trades. Starting off with a grand, doubling each time. After 10 trades, you get £1 million. All right, it's lofty ambitions, I understand that. So I did it with my first stock, African Potash, doubled the money, put it into Atlas Development Support Services, ADSS, and that fell foul a bit because they changed sector. They were, you know, supporting the oil and gas sector, which fell through, of course. Now they've changed completely the name and their sector. So it's falling into a bit of a ditch. But I think they will still double in price. But timeline is now drifted out, so what? So I've learned a lot from that, and I'm starting version 2.0 of my £1 million penny stock punt challenge, and I will be revealing what the first stock is. So that's worth listening out for. You know, if only to laugh, you know? Thank you for listening. There's more tomorrow. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.